Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to issue 4175 of the Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world. It is Friday the 27th of November in the year that simply refuses to end ahead of schedule. I'm Andy Zaltzman, reporting to you live from London, the city where angels fear to tread, largely because they're not sure exactly what the current COVID regulations are and don't understand what they'll be next week when lockdown 2 ends and is replaced by the definitely not a lockdown, restricted freedom 3-tier special. And frankly, they've just given up. I'm specifically in my shed where angels also fear to tread, because generally it's a bit messy. There's nothing much of interest for angels. I'm basically angel proof, and they're generally, if I remember the Bible correctly, not interested in old cricket books. Special Thanksgiving greeting for our American listeners. Happy for Thanksgiving after what's happened over the past month. And joining me for this week's Bugle from a collection of two of the world's most famous continents, Asia and the one Canada's on. Firstly, from Mumbai, India, it's Aditi Mittal. Aditi, welcome back. Welcome back to the Bugle. How are you?
Thank you so much, Andy. I'm so happy to be here. I had a foot surgery recently, and I am currently so high on a cocktail of painkillers. And this is the first time I'm recording the Bugle in the same state that I normally listen to the Bugle.
Oh, right.
Which is high.
Okay. I assume you just mean high on the natural painkiller that is listening to the Bugle, which is actually used medicinally in over 130 countries under the World Health Organization auspices.
As an anesthesia as well.
Yeah. That's basically what I've attempted to do through my comedy career, is sink people into a deep sleep where nothing can be felt or heard. And joining us also for the first time since giving birth, team effort, from New York City, USA, it's Hari Kondabolu.
Thank you, Andy. I should tell you that my partner did do most of the work, such as pushing the child out, carrying the child, currently feeding the child.
You ran point, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody has to organize the thing.
Yeah.
Somebody has to give instructions. I mean, push. If it wasn't for me, then what? Baby be cute, be 12 pounds inside her right now. I just want to clear up a couple of rumors, that, I haven't been on the Bugle for a long time because there's a personal issue between you and me. That is absolutely untrue.
Right.
It is because we just had my partner Jocelyn and I just had a child, right? And also, some are saying that because my podcast Politically Reactive is back with W. Kamau Bell, I decided not to make any time for the Bugle. And the only reason I'm on this week is that we're in an off week from that show.
Right.
And I know a lot of people are saying that, but I want you to know it is not completely accurate.
So, well, what are the slight inaccuracies in that? Get back to me on it. Get back to me on next time.
Give me some time, and I'll come up with a more well-rounded lie the next time we speak.
Have you got any parenting tips from your first couple of months of parenthood?
No. No. Trying to drown out the baby's crying by screaming a good strategy?
It's not flawless. There's something to be said for it. I'm just not sure that long term it's something that you want to get stuck with for the next 18 years. But, you know, it's essentially that's how American politics works. So maybe that, as an American parent, you should give it a go. Anyway.
No, I said where.
I think that's just basically summed up the last 4 years.
Right.
Was that the presidential debates? I mean, well summarized.
As always, a section of the Bugle is going straight in the bin. This week, advent calendars in the bin. It's the 27th of November, so no doubt you're all sitting excitedly by your advent calendars, waiting for the 1st of December. We've got a couple of free advent calendars to give away to you on this week's Bugle in the bin. Firstly, from Zoologics, new His and Hers Grow Your Own Zoo advent calendar. mammal edition. In the For Her side of the advent calendar, 24 ovums from different mammals from around the world. And on the For Him side, 24 vials of sperm, all tastefully presented behind the numbered doors of a manger-themed reversible Christmas scene, complete with 24 test tubes to grow your embryos in. You begin with a gerbil on the 1st of December and work your way up the food chain via the likes of platypuses, goats and elks, before you create a mighty lion on Christmas Eve, which, if all goes well, should pop out just after Easter. Just quick disclaimer, Zoologics cannot be held responsible for any animal successfully birthed. Do not begin breeding program unless you have space in your home for a minimum of 24 additional mammals. May contain twins or full litters. Do not crossbreed, no matter how much you want to see a giraffe-dolphin cross. Also available from Zoologics, the Insect Edition, now with anti-swarm technology, and the Fish Edition, complete with a build-your-own 800,000-gallon half-and-half fresh and saltwater home aquarium. Also in the bin, the Bugle Pessimism Advent Calendar. 24 pieces of gloomy resignation to listen to one a day over the first 24 days of December as you contemplate the inevitable failures of humanity and yourself to get yourself through to another Christmas. Here are the first 6 days to get you started with your Audio Pessimism Advent Calendar. December the 1st. Those begonias I planted in the garden will probably be trampled on by next door's cat and then die before flowering. December the 2nd. I'll never find that watch I think I lost in the park, but might have just lost under the bed. December the 3rd. All meaningful art will crumble under the crushing weight of modern technology and free market economics. December the 4th. Democracy is functionally dead. December the 5th. The planet is almost certainly doomed anyway, regardless of what we belatedly do for the environment now. And December the 6th. Roger Federer might retire in 2021. Well, if we hit that on the 6th of December, God knows what the 24th is going to be like. Anyway, straight in a bit. I've got an anniversary as well. We are recording on the 27th of November. On this day in 1839 in Boston, Massachusetts, the American Statistical Association was founded. The American Lies Association and breakaway American Damned Lies Association took unsuccessful legal action to try to shut the American Statistical Association down, but did not work. Since the founding of the American Statistical Association, the number of statistics in America has risen by an average of 3.2% per annum. And that's just made it slightly worse. In 1895 on this day, Alfred Nobel signed his last will and testament, setting aside his estate to establish the Nobel Prize after his death. Also in his will, he left less well-known bequests that to this day continue to fund the Eurovision Song Contest, Rear of the Year, and the Golden Bucket Award for Most Publicly Vomiting Celebrity. And we also have a special Worst November the 27th Ever Award. The nominees are from 1911, the actors in a New York production of Playboy of the Western World by the Irish playwright J.M. Singh, who were vegetably heckled in a protest at what the audience perceived as insulting stereotypes of Irish people. The audience hurled potatoes, other vegetables, stink bombs, and then more potatoes at the actors. There were 10 arrests, and the police became involved. But was that a worse 27th of November than that suffered by Byzantine Emperor Maurice in the year 602, and he was forced to watch 5 of his sons executed and was then beheaded himself? This week's winner, no contest, Maurice takes it. That is a bad day in anyone's book, isn't it?
It's like somebody had 2020 in a whole day. Like, this is just...
Top story this week, language in 2020. The Oxford English Dictionary has found this year as difficult as everyone else, and for the first time it has been unable to choose a single word of the year, describing 2020 as a year which cannot be neatly accommodated in one single word. And while surely this summarises everything about the confusion of this shittest of years, as the great ancient Greek historian Thucydides himself once wrote, you know a year is a pile of irredeemable shit when it can't be summarised in a single word.
Well, the sound for this year is definitely... to summarise everyone's year, I think that fart noise is appropriate. And also because I have a child, I've heard that sound a lot. So I think that is the perfect summary of 2020 for all involved.
You know, honestly, Andy, what I'm really shocked at is that Oxford is not able to choose a word of the year. You know what that is? That's my choice of the word of the year. It's unprecedented. I would like to nominate the word unprecedented. It's one of those words that if I hear it one more time, something very precedented is going to happen. I have a history of murder. And the other word, I mean, I thought of also a few phrases, one of which was you're on mute, which could definitely be, as Chris nods mutely, on mute. That was one of my other choices. Another choice that I thought was this could have been an email for the phrase of 2020. There was also the word pivot, because I thought I heard it used in a non-physics context for the first time in my life. And I think we've done that thing where at the beginning of the pandemic we pivoted and then we're pivoting back again. So now we're in the same place that we started with, like, lockdowns and stuff. And so, yeah, those have been, there's also, of course, the few that, you know, that really came up to me, like COVID-influencer, someone who is a super spreader, you know, of the COVID, didn't know they had it and then gave it to everybody. And then, of course, there was the COVIDium, which was a series of words that government officials have been putting in press releases to blame their blatant incompetencies on the occurrence of COVID, instead of acknowledging that the pandemic revealed deep structural inequalities that needed to be addressed, irrespective of us having a pandemic or not.
I think that might take it, actually. I think if Oxford could make their decision again after listening to that, Aditi, I think they would go with that. The president of Oxford Dictionaries is someone called Kasper Grafvoll, who's obviously made up. I mean, that is obvious. He's obviously a made up. He's escaped from fiction, Elon Musk style, in Grafvoll's case from a Harry Potter novel. But he said, it's unprecedented and a little ironic. In a year that left us speechless, that 2020 has been filled with new words, unlike a year that left us speechless. That made me think, actually, if only that were true. If no one had said anything this year, Hari, would we be in a better or worse state now? And would it have affected the American election if no words had been spoken?
Yeah, Andy, the written form has been around for quite some time, and a variety of ways to share information without the use of one's vocal cords. So, yeah, it would have been the same, yes.
And Andy, frankly, if no one had said anything, there would be less vocal spray and less spreading of the COVID.
Exactly. I mean, I think that was one of the British government kept having these kind of three phrase slogans. And I think one of them was shut up, shut up, shut up. But some of the words that were on Oxford's list, words that have really been prominent this year, furlough, which is in fact a very old word, and originally it was correctly pronounced furloff, and it dates back to Norman times, a bit of fact here, from the 1066 Norman conquest, after which the Doomsday Book, written in 1086, revealed high levels of unemployment due to the tapestry industry shifting to Bayeux on the French mainland. Britain was largely a tapestry-based economy up till then. King William received a report from the author of the Doomsday Book, Monsieur Dumézde, hence the name of the book, about the need to support those who furl off the employment ladder. That was the influence of the French language. mail in, that's another word of the year. I mean, this is how democracy advances, Horace. It was a huge influence of mail-in votes in the American election. I mean, it just shows how quickly democracy advances, that a mere 160-plus years after the invention of the postal service, we're finally properly incorporating it into democracy. I mean, just wait. We will all be voting on our smartphones as soon as the year 2184. Did you vote by post or...?
I did vote by post. I have no idea whether the vote was counted, but it was sent.
And just one, or in many different states, or you know, did you get your newborn infant?
Here's the thing: if I joke and tell you I voted in every state, the election will be overturned. At this point, that is that he's looking for an opening. Desperately, Trump is looking for some opening. And a random comedian on a political podcast jokingly saying he voted in every state would it would void the election. The election would be voided.
He really sounds like he's full of himself.
Very good. You know, on this show, you're never going to get criticized for a comment like that.
Not by Andy. No.
Other words on the Oxford list of the many words of the year include conspiracy theory. It's been a bumpy year for conspiracy theories, but quantity does not always equal quality. And I guess it's inevitable that as the conspiracy theorists churn out their stuff to meet increasing demand, it's like Hollywood films, isn't it? The standard's going to drop off. They're just hacking out QAnon level builds. There's no craft, no depth, not even a shred of plausibility, no real proper narratives. It's a real shame to see what's happened to that once great industry. Anti-mask, that's, I mean, that used to refer to people who hate ancient Greek drama, or a new tech device that makes your face, or a new tech device that makes your face super expressive, that betrays all your inner thoughts via enhanced eyebrow wigglage and mouth or muscular oh, that made-up word got out of control. Moonshot, or as Neil Armstrong used to call it, selfie. That's another word. And interestingly, the word of the year in 2019 was climate emergency. Now, that, of course, was two words, leading to a lot of early betting on the 2020 word of the year before COVID really struck, being irritated pedants, hyphenated. But climate emergency must have really fancied its chances of being the first word to retain the word of the year title. But little Victoria virus toddled along and screwed everything up. So it's been an interesting year. And this word of the year is quite a new thing. It only began in 2004. Before which humanity was still labouring under the misapprehension that the activities of an entire planet and its people deserve more than one f***ing word. But they have now backdated the word of the year. Some highlights from history include 1 AD, Mer, which is an archaic form of our modern meh. 32 AD, abracadabra. 1916, ouch. 1776, ooh. 1969, look at the flags, for heaven's sake, they're moving in the wind. 1348, goddamn fucking rats. 1939, not again. 1855, oh, nursey. 1865, we apologise for the unscheduled intermission in tonight's performance. 1536, painful breakup. 1996, no diggity. 1877, test match cricket. 1512, what the fuck have you done to my ceiling? 2007, bugle. 4004 BC, da-da! And 4003 BC, underpants. So we now have history covered. I think, though, there could be a bit of a rebound against 2020. I can see the word schmaxination and schmience coming back against vaccination and science. The phrase, turns out it was a massive fraud after all, expecting that to get increasing traction through the year. Julianal, which is the adjective from Giuliani. I can see that becoming a... can see that getting...
That's not a new word.
That's the my phrase, form of birth control.
And the phrase unprecedentedly explosive tantrum by a departing president at an inauguration. I think that that's a phrase that we could hear. In other language news, the Austrian village of fucking is changing its name. As if 2020 couldn't get any worse, the world's greatest village, fucking, as featured in Bugle issue 191, has announced that it is going to be changing its name fundamentally because humanity is too childish. It is sick of being lampooned for its name. But this is the worst thing that can happen. We need all the happiness we can get, do we not, at the moment? And it's changing its name from fucking to fugging, disappointing all fans of rude words. This is a real blow to all humanity, Hari, I would say.
Well, it's better than the runner-up name that they came up with, which was Flaccid Town. I thought, you know, was in terms of its the evolution of the town's name was appropriate.
Right.
You know?
There's a TV miniseries called that coming out. I think the makers of Westworld have put it together. It's about a place where you can go to have your impotence dealt with. Anyway.
But I mean, there have been many towns like this that have had to change their names due to, English speakers sort of having fun at their cost. So there was, of course, Cunnilingus, Pennsylvania.
Yep.
Which became Funnilingus, Pennsylvania. And that didn't change anything about it. Just like called Fugging is going to change nothing about this.
The name of the village apparently dates from the 11th century, well before sexual intercourse was even invented, of course. So I mean, you can understand the villagers not thinking that far ahead. And of course, at that stage in the village, the word "fucking" was merely a technical term for the from the world of carpentry, meaning inserting a screw or nail into a pre-existing hole. So interesting. There you go, Helen. You're not the only member of the Zaltzman family who knows a thing or two about the origin of naughty words. But the fuckingers, which is what the people of the village of Fucking apparently known as, soon to be Fuggingers or Fugsters or Fuggles, have just 5 weeks left of being residents of the most admired village in the universe. But they bottled it. They've elected to join the ranks of villages with only slightly amusing names, along with the residents of Wonk in Germany, Nodge in Hungary, and, of course, Tisdekel in Denmark. it's very sad, really. And also rumours that the Canadian Union of Nautical Technicians are considering changing their name to the Canadian Nautical Technicians Union. And it's, of course, reminiscent of the rebranding of the now-defunct airline TWA, Transworld Airlines, a corporate name in many ways well ahead of its time in hindsight, which was known up until 1950 as Transcontinental and Western Air, after dropping the word transport from its name following an emergency board meeting in 1930, a day after it was formed. America news now, and it's pardoning season. Hari, Donald Trump, your president, for the next either few weeks or 4 and a bit years.
Just I believe what you meant is the president for the next.
Let's not prejudge the legal process. He's pardoned A, a turkey, and B, Michael Flynn. Obviously it's always an exciting time of the year, pardoning season. Turkey must have been delighted.
The turkey was pardoned for what I believe is its only crime, which is being alive. I think that was the only thing it had done wrong. And the thing is, knowing Trump's character, that turkey's dead. That turkey was shot immediately after the photo. The turkey knew too much. The turkey was eaten that night. Like, that turkey's gone. I mean, it's the Michael Flynn one is... What was strangest to me with the Michael Flynn story is how he decided to tell the world the news via Twitter. Andy, do you have the tweet in front of you by any chance?
Well, he said, "It is my great honor to announce that General Michael T. Flynn has been granted a full pardon. Congratulations to General Flynn and his wonderful family." As if it's a great achievement, a full, it's sort of like one winning the Masters Golf or something, right, or a Nobel Prize. I mean, congratulations for the great achievement of, I don't know, knowing too much, as you say.
Or right. Essentially, congratulations for dodging a bullet that the person who pardoned you shot in the first place. I mean, it's basically, this is something Trump's done his whole life. There's going to be a tape actually released later this week, which I can't tell you more about, but I do have exclusive access to. But he does say in the tape, "It was a false positive. You don't have herpes. Congratulations to you and your wonderful family." So he does have a track record with this kind of thing.
But it is. We've talked about this before, I think, on a show you were on about how strange this convention of presidential pardons is. It does give off a bit of a sort of crime is fine vibe. I mean, wouldn't it make logical sense if, as well as overturning the crimes of the guilty, the president himself was also entitled to go on a week long crime spree just to get it all out of his system?
Well, I think that is what's going to happen, because he wants to pardon himself.
Yeah.
That's what we all assume will happen, even though you can't pardon yourself before you're charged with a crime, right? If you do it preemptively, it sets a very dangerous precedent. So what you're basically saying is, I am now invincible. You cannot touch me. I can do whatever I want. I've been pardoned preemptively, which would lead to the first ever president slash serial killer, which, you know, look, he's broken a lot of ground, but that would be a new one.
Yeah. Well, you've clearly not read the new biography of William Howard Taft.
I heard that he's going to pardon John Wilkes Booth, the man who killed Lincoln. Yeah, because he said there were good people on both sides.
I mean, there are a number of historical figures. Lee Harvey Oswald, he could get off. Jeffrey Dahmer, Benedict Arnold, Hannibal Lecter, Steve Bartman. Lex Luthor, Vanity Smurf, Bigfoot, and George III could all be in line for pardons from
Steve Buscemi in Air Force One. That guy was crazy. I look forward to that pardon.
You're going to be pardoned too for so many of your puns, Andy. You can re-enter the United States again.
Right, I'm not accepting a pardon because that would be me admitting that I was in some way guilty. You know. The turkey it was called Corn, and was let off scot-free from a rap list that included convictions for aggressive pecking whilst in possession of a beak, being feathery with malice aforethought, wattle waggling, and impersonating a goose. As well as the usual Trump associate stick of lying to the FBI, tax fraud, and bribery. It's good. Good that turkey lives to see another day. What are you doing? What are you doing for Thanksgiving, Hari? Are you?
It's already happened, Andy.
Was it yesterday? What have you got on Thursday for? It's ridiculous.
It's always a Thursday. It's always been a Thursday.
Okay. Sorry, I forget. I'm a bit out of the loop.
Quick side. Just a little small beef I have with a lot of friends who are Brits over the years. Yeah. When Thanksgiving is brought up, they'll say things like, that's when you all celebrate the genocide you committed over a meal. And they refer to it as the genocide we committed. And they seem to forget that we were you. This was a genocide you committed.
Oh, we hear it from the Australians. Now we're getting it from the Americans. Well, I mean, honestly.
But I think there's something beautiful about this. Like, you know, I think like the genocide was what, like, they took, you know, like syphilis infested blankets and gave them out to the locals and massacred them.
It was smallpox, but yeah, there was a lot of intentional murder, as well as them having smallpox and spreading it quickly to immune systems that couldn't handle it. But yeah, it was pretty. Yeah.
Well, it was ages ago, and we have now toppled the statue of the smallpox virus that was erected in every town in Britain in the early 20th century.
You know, they still say very good things about it in our textbooks, so I don't know.
In other American news, Ben Carson, former presidential candidate, of course, Hari, you're our pillow industry correspondent, and yes. Ben Carson has apparently been taking coronavirus advice from the person who set up the MyPillow pillow company.
That is correct. Yes. Ben Carson is an actual doctor, by the way.
Yeah. The best kind of doctor.
It's not like, it's not an education doctorate or anything. But no offense, but you know, if I have a heart attack, the last thing I want is, I have a doctorate in philosophy. That's not going to help me if I have a heart attack.
Well, not even like to see you come to some greater understanding of your place in the universe and the purpose of life as you breathe your last. That would help, surely.
But he's an actual medical doctor, and he's taking advice from the MyPillow guy, who somehow has an inside lane to the president and the cabinet, which is stunning. And to be fair, his pillows are pretty good. Right. I wouldn't say they're great, but they're pretty good. However, if you've never used a pillow before, It's earth shattering. It's a real paradigm shifter. But yeah, it's really, the whole thing is very strange because Ben Carson wasn't just a medical doctor. He was one of the greatest brain surgeons of all time. Like, it's not just that he was gifted. He, you know, his gifted hands were discussed constantly. Like, it was an extremely big deal. And yet, whenever he talks, he makes brain surgery seem less impressive. It's so...
That is some achievement, really, when you put it in those terms.
Oh, absolutely. Like, you wouldn't imagine someone being a dumb genius. And that is exactly... Like, this is a man who once said that Jews could have prevented the Holocaust if they had guns. So, your first thought is, oh, this guy tried brain surgery on himself, and it was a tremendous failure. Like, this is not what should have happened.
Yeah, I guess we maybe just practicing at home one night and thought, oh, right. this is the only head.
What does this do?
So the MyPillow guy, Mike Lindell, it does slightly show how COVID has just sent the entire world off its rocker, essentially. Because, I mean, you wouldn't get this happening with other illnesses. You would have, you know, hey, you can design and market pillows, can't you? Yes, I can. Oh, good. How do I treat gallstones? No, but with COVID, everything, all traditional logic has gone out the window. The MyPillow website also has currently, as I checked for the first time, a Sean Hannity special offer, which if you click the Sean Hannity special offer, you get 60% off a presumably special Hannity-infused pillow, which guarantees not only a good night's sleep, but also that you will wake up with reactionary views on immigration, a pathological fear of social progress, and a sense that feminism is a communist conspiracy. So that's got to send you off to sleep.
There's some validity in the idea that the common person has valid medical advice. What you are, Andy, is brainwashed by these liberal medical universities who talk about their liberal science. Wash your hands, wear a mask, don't spit or urinate into an open orifice during surgery. All these rules. Bloodletting doesn't work. Leeches cure AIDS. Like, all these, you're just buying into it. Okay, the average person, just because they don't have a medical degree from so-called experts who are basing their knowledge of based on hundreds of years of medicine, so what? Don't buy into the hype.
How does this MyPillow guy sleep at night? Ironically, this is crazy. Oh my god!
I'm sorry, but that's the joke of the show. That is the best joke of the show.
A $30 pillow. You know what? Go to hell. You know, this thing, like this whatever. Ben Carson sounds like an Indian uncle. Like, he sounds like a proper Indian uncle who will. Like, Indian politicians are now doing this thing, right? Where they, like, are recommending, like, cow urine for cancer curing. And, like, you, like, smear cow dung on your arms and you, like, you become fairer and stuff. But the moment they get, like, even a mild hiccup, they're the first ones to, like, fly to Johns Hopkins University. It's freaking crazy. It's crazy.
India news now, and this is an interesting story, Aditi. Love Jihad is the headline that you sent us for this. You're going to fill in some of those intriguing gaps in those between those two words.
Jihad, as Google tells me, is the holy war against Islamism. And love, as is known in Indian context, is something terrifying, and young people should never be able to do it. And so what we've done now, the two biggest states in India, the most populated states in India, have decided to pass a law combining those two words called the Love Jihad Law. The Love Jihad Law forbids inter-religious marriage, especially marriages between Hindus and Muslims, are now punishable by law. And you know what, actually, I mean, it's sort of keeping in trend with the rabid Islamophobia that has been sort of now worldwide, and India doesn't want to be left behind, you know. And so sort of just like, you know, we're leaving our Islamophobia print everywhere. We've in fact managed to smear it in every industry. Like we have something called education jihad, where now we're concerned about the high number of Muslims who are showing up for civil service entrance exams. The understanding for love jihad mostly is that, you know, there are these really, really, really hot Muslim guys and these really, really, really dumb Hindu girls, right? And then they fall in love and then they make them convert. And as a really, 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 really dumb Hindu girl, nothing would give me more joy than to piss off a bunch of cow piss peddling politicians. And so I'd like to use this platform to put a call out to any, I'm not even here for the looks, just any nice Muslim guy who likes to laugh, doesn't mind me eating crisps in bed, and, you know, would love to f*** around with Indian bureaucracy for a couple of years, please get in touch with me. Because, you know, can I tell you the truth? Like, it blows my mind to imagine, because right now, I mean, in Muslim men are under attack, right? The baby steps of oppression always start with sort of attacking the men of the community. And so we had recently what was called the triple talaq law that went into, that was criminalized, which meant that if you gave your wife a triple talaq, then that it was saying talaq, 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 divorce, divorce, divorce three times, then you would be put in jail. This was formerly a non-jailable crime because nobody was doing it. But they decided to make this a jailable crime so that they could put away, you know, young Muslim men for substantial amounts of time, not giving a fuck about the actual Muslim women, the wives who would be left without the support of, because normally even after divorce, Muslim men are supposed to provide economic support to the women that they divorce. But when they're in jail, they're not going to be able to provide much. It concerns me that there are now, you know, like with this sort of assault on Muslim men, that actually just Hindu men are up late at night being like, why are they so hot?
That's true.
Hari knows. I find this a bit reductive, frankly, because what's going to happen? We already, India already has the highest population of Muslims in the world. And so if there's no sort of interfaith marriage allowed, they're just going to keep marrying each other. The same thing is going to happen to the Hindus. You know, it's just going to be a bunch of Hindus marrying within caste and within last name and within sort of the religion. And we're all, at the end of the day, I think India is going to be a country of like 4.5 billion Prince Charles due to vicious inbreeding. And so, yeah, I mean, these are sort of my, and you know, it's so tragic and it's so this thing, because interfaith marriage doesn't even happen all that much. Like the, in I look at the percentages, it's 2.2% to 2.9%. We aren't even doing it that much. And so, I mean, and while a pandemic rages outside, I don't know, did I mention unprecedented times? I feel like we discussed it this year. I can't believe that this is what we're making laws about.
I was obviously bummed to read about the law, and it's such a step backwards for progress, for civilization. But I was also bummed about the name Love Jihad, because it really, like, it'll force me to rename the Bollywood remake of Love Actually that I've been writing for quite some time now. And it's like, oh, great. I had come up with the title before I wrote the script. Now what?
Before we go, Bugle merch is available. New and expanded range featuring probably the greatest bubble hat in the history of human headgear. Christmas jumpers. What else, Chris? What else have we got on the site?
We've got Bugle scarves.
Awesome scarves.
You can also buy the scarf and bubble hat as one bundle for someone who you really love this Christmas.
Right.
And we've got half a glass of water t-shirts on sale too.
Right. So that's all your Christmas presents sorted out. Anything to plug? Any shows? Hari, you did your plug right at the start. You got anything else?
Oh, yeah. I don't f*** around, Andy. Politically Reactive is back every Thursday. New episodes, me and W. Kamau Bell. Also, me and my brother's podcast, the Untitled Kundabolu Brothers podcast, will be out sporadically, but we do have an episode coming out soon.
Aditi, any shows or Netflix stuff?
My third stand-up special, Mother of Invention, is on Prime Video UK and Ireland. So if you're in that area, be sure to avoid those two places. And I will have the first episode of my podcast, Off Brand, coming out on the 12th of December. So if any of you are listening, listen, please.
Just one other story, which we'll leave you with, is the death of Diego Maradona. At the age of 60, the great footballer, the Grim Reaper, like so many 1980s defenders, has hacked Maradona down. And sure, Maradona, the way he lived, was looking for the foul. He's almost been goading the Reaper to chop him down like a shrouded Andoni Goicoechea, for any Bilbao fans out there. And the surprise is that Maradona has not leapt out of his coffin and started complaining to the ref, which was disappointing for his many fans. He was one of the most brilliant, compelling individuals in the history of sport. If he was a fictional character in a sports film, you'd go, yeah, very entertaining, but it's a bit overwritten on the whole hackneyed flawed genius shtick. But I even saw on the was watching CNN yesterday, and it get quite a lot of coverage in them, and Maradona said I hate everything that ever comes out of America.
I don't know much about Maradona, but I did hear that he had good hands.
Great hands.
I don't even like soccer. That joke felt good.
Too soon.
Andy, my favourite thing about the Maradona story this week is that obviously the goalkeeper that he used his hand on was Peter Shilton.
Yeah.
Who so Maradona was hated and Peter Shilton got a lot of sympathy. And then Peter Shilton over recent years has emerged as a massive Brexiteer. And so Peter Shilton started trending on social media over the last 24 hours, mostly so Remainers could call Peter Shilton a c**t.
Before we play you out with some lies about our premium level voluntary subscribers, we will dig into the Bugle archives for commentary of Maradona's greatest moment of individual skill, that unfathomably brilliant second goal, scored with the correct part of his body against England in the 1986 World Cup quarterfinal, as heard on the Bugle back in 2010, courtesy of the BBC archives and their commentator in Mexico 86, Pernell Hinge.
Maradona gets the ball now, the cheating little shit. What are you going to do? Punch it in from the halfway line, you prick. He turns now. Kick the f***er! Past Beardsley. Whack him, you loser! Past Hodge. What part of kick that bastard of the balls are you struggling to understand, Hodge? Past Reed. Nail him! F***ing nail him! He's up to Fennec now. Come on, Terry, put him in a body bag! Shit, he's past f***ing Butcher as well! F***ing twat him, Terry! Just Shilton to beat now. Take his f***ing head off, Peter! I don't give a f*** if he scores! F***ing ruin him! Oh, bollocks, it's in! Oh, no, it's in! 2-0! Oh, that was a tremendous goal by the little magician, Laurie McMenemy. Have you ever seen anything like that?
Walter F. had to disappoint a friend last week when the friend thought he'd discovered a new type of firework that neither makes a bang nor lights up, but stays in the air for much longer than a traditional firework and moves in more irregular patterns and is visible in daylight. Walter told said friend, as diplomatically as possible, that what he had in fact spotted was a pigeon. Jeff Welder would like to see a breeding program to restore a wild griffin population to the world. Jeff explains the half-eagle, half-lion, gold-hoarding mythical beast would be a real tourist attraction, as well as making some of today's more unimpressive, complacent, low-achieving creatures buck their ideas up a bit. I'm looking at you, koalas. Raise it. Jerry Egan and Joseph Serrante, by the most fictitious of coincidences, both had elderly relatives who went to the same school back in the 1950s. Jerry's great-uncle thought he'd busted open an international spy ring when he heard the school cook on the phone saying, "Yes, of course, Stalin, I will make them crumble," while stirring a pot of suspiciously lumpy custard. Joseph's great-auntie herself overheard Jerry's great-uncle reporting the suspicion to their head teacher. She then made secret recordings of the chef for the next 12 months and came to the conclusion that the cook Cook had probably in fact said, "Yes, of course, darling," not "Yes, of course, Stalin," whilst speaking to his wife, who was the kitchen manager and meal planner at the same school and loved desserts with a bit of fruit and a bit of crunch. Christopher Müller thinks there might be a passable movie in a story about a group of 1930s Soviet women ballet dancers, forced to give up ballet because all the male dancers were sent to Siberia for dancing insufficiently commonly. They then form a troupe to travel the USSR, expressing the glories of the collective through the medium of interpretative dance. The film would be called Stalin's Darlings and would be harrowing, heartwarming, and sexy in equal measure. And finally, Steve Jamieson was once hypnotized as a child at a circus performance, as a result of which he was left with a lasting confusion for some reason between ornithology and endoscopy. This inevitably resulted in an extremely fractious school outing to a local bird sanctuary, which featured Steve being sent back to the school bus for shouting, "Not the pelican, please not the pelican," at a very high volume. Here endeth this week's lies. To join the Bugle voluntary subscription scheme and make a recurring or one-off donation to the show, go to thebuglepodcast.com and click the donate button. Goodbye.